SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Santa Anita Park, the press box again. No Clockers Corner. We got to get this solved by Monday because, you know, the post-weekend action. We'd love to have the live conversations above Clockers Corner with winning connections and perhaps a winning connection over the weekend that gets win number 2,999 and win 3,000. Spoke to Bob Baffert yesterday after the show. He thinks he's hopeful that he'll get the two wins that'll get him to a milestone. Happy to be here going into the weekend and really coast to coast as we started to discuss yesterday, including if you were listening to the replay and feeding right into this morning to Dave Groening's conversation. It was good to get. I don't do that often. The Thursday preview for a Saturday slate, and Dave with the John Imbrial news, and the fun way to catch up with Dave to talk about the Withers, and we got the visit from Johnny I himself, which was fun, and Rich Yang. I thought that would be a hit, give Rich a chance, his former colleague. And, you know, as I told you yesterday, I don't come up here all that often. And so yesterday and this last half hour after getting set up, took a couple of pictures, some of the famous turf writers and not just turf writers, but the turf publicists that occupied the space, and a wonderful portrait of Joe Hernandez, who died at the mic famously and had called every race at Santa Anita right from the get-go, from the day the place opened. And if you haven't, speaking of Joe Hernandez, name hasn't come up in a long time, but Dr. Rudy Alvarado wrote the biography that we talked about at the time of the release. I should recirculate that. In fact, not only did he write the story, in the book, when you buy the book, you get a recording. I don't know how many minutes it was. I haven't looked at it in ages, actually, or listened to it. But it was very cool. You get audio of Joe Hernandez, and you can find it on YouTube and such. But that just popped in my head to Johnny D, and I just had a little exchange about Hernandez. As a wonderful portrait of him. There's also a wonderful portrait of Frank Miramati as you walk into the press box. I didn't see Frank yesterday, so we'll have to make a point of that. Maybe, in fact, I've never had him live. It's always been, because I'm done by 9, so he hasn't come over yet to the racetrack. The racing action canceled at Golden Gate, if you haven't followed this story. And in fact, this morning, kind of a funny a couple of funny remarks down on the Clockers Corner terrazzo. Jack Carava and Mark Latt, they're they're as reliable down there as Rosie is in the restaurant. But a gas line At Laurel, it was a water main and a sewer line and whatnot. And this time it's Golden Gate's turn. They're canceling, not indefinitely, but for the weekend. And the gas line, they can't get. They can't heat water, and they can't. There's a whole bunch of issues involved with this. So as a result, the Stronach 5 yesterday ended up not being able to be run. So they canceled. I'll be back next week, and meanwhile, they'll fix whatever. They'll fix whatever's ailing the system at Golden Gate. So. What can I tell you? Infrastructure. It's infrastructure week around the ovals, I guess. After listen, if it wasn't for the water main issue at Laurel, we might not have Independence Hall. His entire run up might have been completely different. Who knows, right? Because he diverted, and next thing he wins the Nashua, and here he is, and we'll talk about him next week into the Sam Davis. Nothing of particular note. I was very busy, actually, to be honest. I was very focused on Beat the Host and had to get the selections in earlier this morning, and it's a very funny. I'm looking forward to talking to Mike Welch and getting some feedback from Welch about the Gulfstream sequence tomorrow, because there's some horses that are just too obvious and too heavy handed to ignore, and that of course starts with Tis the Law. And Green Light Go. And as we kind of brought up a little bit yesterday with Haskin, both of them have a kind of little bit of a similar storyline, in terms of frustrating last starts with big anticipation. But every indication coming into this, the Holy Bull and the Swale, tough to ignore. But you can understand if more so, I suppose, in the Swale, where Green Light Go is 2-1, and there's more than just the two obvious horses that I think pretty much everybody is acknowledging when it comes to Untitled and even Chivalry and Mischievous Alex. So there's at least three, and there's nothing wrong with Necker Island. It's an interesting group. I ended up picking Green Light Go, and I won't even say grudgingly taking him. And Tis the Law, I'm not arguing with, and I don't want to be against, frankly, as somebody who was just a mammoth Funny Side fan, and to some degree launched Derby Trail, my website. On the back of Funny Side. So I'm finding myself rooting for Barkley Tag and the New York bred. He obviously is going to be super short. But, Toledo is okay, even without a diploma. And at the Indian, you can see some upside potential. We'll get the thoughts of Mike Welch. I also went, I didn't want to take the favorites when it came to the two turf races. And I took middle priced horses in both of those spots. And in particular, the Swedish Chant, when you get to it. And what I did was I used the five races that comprise the late pick five at Gulfstream. Those are my Gulfstream races. And at Santa Anita, I took the first and the late pick four. So, because I'm going to write them up anyway, and So I thought, you know, rather than skip around, well, you know, let's try to help people build multi-race tickets. And these will be horses that I'll have on top. And in the two turf races, I mean, if Green Light Go and Tis the Law end up, you know, running well and running to favoritism, there are prices to be had in the two turf races. The Sweetest Chant starts the pick five. And I ended up surprising myself. I ended up with Sunset Promise down inside for Mike Maker and is going to get, you know, obviously a ground saving trip, and there's pace. And I thought a Rat Ortiz down inside saving ground. I wanted to find a price, and you know, there's some alternate type potential, you know, beyond more, you know, moral reasoning is going to be short, and you know, you go against Chad at your own risk in these settings. But she's going to have to take a step forward, frankly, and she's my type, the 2-for-2 Clement, second choice. So 9-2 Sunset Promise, and then I'm going to land on Stanley Huff in the Dania Beach. South Bend is 6-1, and I think may end up even a little higher than that when it's said and done, when they open the gates. This is a turf play. This is strictly a pedigree play on the female family with Stanley trying South Bend and I on the grass. And I think, frankly, pace-wise too, style-wise, Leperu off the pace, but there's alternates there too. Famished for John Kimmel, who ran well in the turf start in New York, and Mott puts Sprawl on the grass, the Claiborne. There's the City Zip side of things obviously provide inspiration, undoubtedly. And, you know, Mott's other player in there, Homeland, as well. Sprawl is the first-time turf. Both of the Motts start their three-year-old season first-time Lasix. It's a good race. The Dania Beach comes up really good. But South Bend, Sandra's Rose, the old Trieste mare, she provides plenty of turf aptitude, and I think we're going to get a decent number. And then even in the nightcap, I wanted to try a price as well. That's that very good competitive non-winners of three lifetime claimer, and going a mile. And at 8-1, appealing briefs for me. So I'm relying on a couple of favorites, and then three middle-priced 9-2, 6-1, 8-1 types in the other three. So that's the glance at my Gulfstream Beat the Host plays, and we'll get to the Santa Anita side of things as well. Hope you'll come in and either, if you haven't yet qualified for the Beat the Host Championship, and if you're accumulating points toward the year end, here's your chance. There it is. We'll talk to everybody. We've got visits with Jay Pridman first, and then Hammer. Hammer's they take entries today at Oaklawn. So Hammer is no longer. He's moved steadily from hour three, then into hour two, and now it'll be for the rest of the winter. It'll be hour one visits from Hammer. Nick Tamaro. We'll do the cross-country pick five at Aqueduct with Nick. Top of hour two. James Scully in hour two as well. We'll get some plays and get his Kentucky Derby report, see what he thinks of the three preps. Jeff Siegel. Siegel and I yesterday spent some time with Baffert after the show. I was heading out. Siegel was heading in. And actually, one aspect of a conversation that came up, which was enlightening, Baffert was talking about what transpired in Pegasus with Mucho Gusto, and then Roadster, who runs here on Saturday, and you know, and having the sort of tricky situation, you know, after Michael Lund Peterson sold Mucho Gusto to Prince Faisal. And, you know, ideally, if I think if Baffert wanted Mucho Gusto to run a big A race, he wanted him to do it in that in the Saudi Cup, although McKinsey already headed there. But the revelation came as Jeff and Baffert were talking about McKinsey going to the Saudi Cup, about the configuration at King Abdulaziz Racecourse in Riyadh. And it's a one-turn mile and an eighth. And there was some confusion about it, apparently, but Dick Powell confirmed, and Jeff thought that it was a mile and an eighth one turn. Baffert was not disappointed hearing that, because he didn't know himself if it was a mile and an eighth or a mile and an eighth one turn or two turns. It's pretty funny. So we'll talk to Siegel, Ed DeRosa as well, and Mike Welch, and I've got one little opening here. I was hoping to latch on maybe to Brad Free and get a couple of free Brad Free selections for the Saturday card here. So there it is. Weekend preview at the races. Brought to you by Twin Spires. Take the break here. Come back. Jay Pribman standing by. Hammer to follow here in hour one. From the press box, I don't know. I hope Monday and Tuesday we get to get back to Clocker's Corner. I just doesn't have the same feel, but it's nice. Back after this with Jay.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Join us this Saturday at Santa Anita as we continue down the Kentucky Derby Trail with top three-year-olds in the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis Stakes at 1/116. We'll also have the Grade 2 San Pasquale at 1/18 and important prep for the Santa Anita Handicap on March 7th. And Turf Marathoners will go a mile and one quarter Saturday in the Grade 2 San Marcos. In addition to great racing, we've also got free infield general admission and parking each weekend via Gate 6 off of Colorado Place. And make plans to be here early this Sunday. We'll have a special big game Sunday early first post time of 11 a.m. with admission gates opening at 9 a.m. We'll also have free general admission on Sunday. Come for the races and stay for the game as we'll have drink specials and a free $3,000 football contest. That's all on Big Game Sunday. First post time on Saturday is at 12:30, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough. Who you trying to impress, man? Need you for some love? Try to be someone. Try to be someone.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes in to the weekend preview, but you can't preview the weekend without reviewing the prior. Jay Privman joins us from the Daily Racing Forum. I'm about 9-12 chairs down from where Jay Privman has. I imagine, Jay, if you added up the hours you spent in this press box over the course of your life, it's a pretty sizable percentage.
Yeah, it's a great place to watch the races, isn't it? I can't imagine a better view in racing than that setting there. I love being there, and I'm looking forward to being there tomorrow.
Well, and although it's dark, I could tell when I came in that, in fact, you are perched just perfectly above the wire, just at that. Is that a perfect angle, or how often do you? You know, you aren't sure about how they are when you hit the wire.
Yeah, when I worked for the Daily News, I was like, back when I started out, I was much closer to the finish line. Now I'm, you know, I don't know, 10 yards up the stretch.
Yeah.
It's a slight angle. On the dirt, you're usually 99.9% sure. Sometimes the turf is a little trickier.
Well, happy to be back here, and for me, this is a new experience. As I said yesterday and this morning, because I've always done the show from Clacker's Corner, the lines down. So this is different, and I'm kind of lonely up here, but that's all right. happy to come up, and Jay, you're happy to be home after a fortnight in South Florida.
Yeah, down there for about a week and a half with the Eclipse Awards and the Pegasus, and now that's in the rearview mirror. I was saying before, that's kind of like that race, that weekend is sort of, to me, the transitioning from the previous year to the current year, because you've got the horses, you've got the award ceremony to wrap up 2019, you've got a race that has horses that are either scheduled to head off to stud, if they make it, or are starting their first race for the current year. And so now we're all full steam ahead into 2020. And this weekend, you've got three derby preps, three point-scoring races, and then a race that's not a point-scoring race. It's pretty significant as well in the Swale. So it's a good weekend.
Very much. And we're going to dive into it in a minute. I would love to get some Pegasus wrap-up thoughts from you, and heard some comments down at Clacker's Corner after the show yesterday about, particularly about the West Coast participants. But what was your final take?
Well, obviously Mucho Gusto ran the best race he's ever run. I thought prior to that his best race was when he was second in the Haskell to Maximum Security, but this was a big step forward for him. It certainly seemed like the time off that he had really was beneficial. He was probably a worn-out horse from all the travel that he'd done last year, and getting the time off, and he was obviously training very well. That was the whole reason he was in the race, was because he trained so well, and he went down there, and he got the money. It was obviously a little bit of a watered-down race with Omaha Beach and Spun to Run coming out, but you know, that said, the way Mucho Gusto ran, I don't know if anybody was beating him on the day, just the way he performed that day. Higher Power was extremely disappointing. They said he didn't have any issues in terms of bleeding coming out of the race, and that was the question that you had, not only with him, but you know, anybody who didn't run up to par among both of those races. You had 22 horses who were, and I think 21 of them were, you know, regular Lasix users, and so it was, if horses didn't run up to what you would expect of them, and Higher Power certainly qualified, that was a natural thing to wonder about, but his connections have said that that was not an issue, that he was just out of sorts once he got down there, and he just didn't run well, just didn't take the ship all that well. So hopefully he can regroup, and because he's certainly better than that, as we saw in the Pacific Classic, even when he was a solid third in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Well, and those elements were brought up, and I heard that same thing, really, that the ship for Higher Power, and whether it's, you know, some of it, it's not a huge climate difference, although, you know, it still is a transport, and that he just never got right, you know, leading in. And so they'll regroup, undoubtedly, and we'll talk about another Sadler, the latest Sadler Aronis handicap horse, Jay, when we get into, you know, some of the racing this weekend. But you know, what is this portend for Mucho Gusto? I mean, I suppose you're the kind of horse you're going to want to see, and I don't know if the Saudi trip is the place to watch it. I suppose it could be, but certainly with Arrogate when he went, you know, it's kind of intriguing to have a horse that nobody was really thinking about as a, you know, new fresh face for the handicap division this year.
Right. I mean, he was certainly, I agree with you, he probably wasn't at top of mind as being a major player, a solid player, but not at the top of the charts. But that was a performance that certainly makes you think he's obviously capable of doing it the way he ran that day. The Saudi Cup is definitely next. I mean, that's the reason he was bought by Saudi interests following his last race as a three-year-old. So that's where he's headed, and McKenzie will be heading there as well. So you've got a from Baffert's Barn, and obviously, you know, along with Midnight Bizou and the rest of the American horses that are going over. But that's it's a pretty solid representation from the U.S. with the two from Baffert's Barn and the Eclipse Award-winning older female on dirt from last year.
Jay, unique situation, and as somebody that's covered Mandela for, you know, really the breadth of your career, this had to be the least satisfying way to, you know, to end things after so much anticipation.
Yeah, it was you could tell it was just a gut punch for him and Taylor Cambrose, then his exercise rider. And they were all just pretty downcast when it happened. But, you know, they took the attitude of, look, it would have been worse if he'd have gone out there and raced. But, you know, that's why Mandela's as good as he is. I mean, he catches things like that before they become catastrophic problems. You know, unfortunately, with this horse, we're just never going to know how good he was, because when he was good, he was very good. But there were just, unfortunately, too many interruptions in his career for races that were the most significant, the Pegasus and obviously, most significantly, the Kentucky Derby, when he had the trapped epiglottis and had to come out. You know, having watched him race and having watched him train, I think he had the potential to be a superstar, but you've got to go by what he actually did and deal in reality. And the fact of the matter is he ran 10 times. He ran some very good races, including in the Arkansas Derby. And I thought coming off a layoff to win the Santa Anita Sprint Championship was a terrific performance. So he had some good high points. It's just, I'd have liked to have seen more.
Well, those that head to the the stallion barns, and everything else moves forward toward the three-year-old season, and we're inching closer to the debut of Derby Watch. Once that, once you tear January off the calendar, Jay, Derby Watch bubbles to the surface, and this is the first big weekend with the trio of preps toward the bigger goals. Let's talk about what's going on today. Maybe you start in New York.
So, yeah, so the Withers is the first of the three races that will be run tomorrow that will have points towards the Kentucky Derby. All of these races, Steve, came up, I thought, without a lot of depth. I mean, there's a couple of horses at the top that are interesting, but it drops off pretty quickly. And even in the Withers, you would think Shotsky is going to probably be favored off the Remsen, but I still need to see more from him. I thought he got an easy lead in that race. It was a deep, tiring surface, and I don't know that it's quite what he liked best, but he hung on to win that race. He certainly looks like a big lumbering sort who's not going to be hindered by running farther than a mile and an eighth. So he's coming back at the same distance, and we'll see if there's anybody here who can step up and beat him. I thought Prince of Pharaohs looked like he kind of emptied out towards the end of the mile. Jerome last time, he made a nice little run to get up into second, but he was losing ground the last furlong of the race. You know, Porto's is interesting, coming off a win against Maidens at Aqueduct, but it was on a sloppy sealed track, so you don't know if that propelled him. And he was only beating five horses in the race, and considering that he was coming off a career best 74, the fact that he went off a 2-5 in that race, to me, shows that he was probably not running against the elite of the division. So there's a lot of questions in this race for me. You know, Monday Morning QB stretching out is probably going to be the one to catch in here, and maybe that helps Shotsky. Maybe he'll be better with having a target to run at, but I think Monday Morning QB is an interesting horse if he can run this far. That's a big question. He's only run 7/8, and this is a full quarter mile farther than the farthest he's ever run. So a lot of questions in here. Certainly don't feel like taking a short price on anybody, and I'd have to just let the board be my guide as to who I'd want to gamble on if I wanted to gamble on in here, because I don't have there's nobody in here I'm really crazy about.
I'm curious, Jay, what's your take on the three-year-olds running the nine furlongs now, and what it, you know, what it says about the kind of horse they are, and you know, then having to essentially, I mean, I don't think anybody that has got designs on Derby is going to, you know, subsequently cut back in distance when you're running a mile and an eighth in February.
Yeah, it seems like it's a little early, but I mean, in the case of Shotsky, for instance, I mean, he's already done it
right
at the end of his 2-year-old year. And for the others, it's like if you don't go here and you want to stay in the Northeast right now, your options are fairly limited. But it's a big ask, and you know, like in the case of Monday Morning QB, we were just talking about, he's going from 7/8, and it's not like he's now going to do a short porch mile and a 16th or mile at, you know, short porch mile at Oaklawn or mile and a 16th at Gulfstream or something like that. He's going to go a tough mile and an eighth, two turns at Aqueduct. It's a big test for a horse like that.
Well, and you know, we talked to Todd earlier in the week about Porto's a little bit, and here's a horse that'll be running nine furlongs for the third time in his career.
Right, and obviously he needs it.
Yeah,
he ran a mile and an eighth first time out last summer at Saratoga. This will be his fourth. This will be his fourth mile and an eighth race in five starts, and the only time he didn't run a mile and an eighth, he ran a mile and 16th at Keeneland. So yeah, it's obvious from the way he's been campaigned that he wants this and more, and that's, you know, one of the things in his advantage, or to embrace about him, is that, well, maybe the farther distances that he's going to be running will help him. He's by Tappet, so hopefully he'll be getting, you would assume he'd continue to improve. The question mark with him is if he got a little dressed up last time on a sloppy track against vastly inferior competition.
I think the initial reaction to this horse is, oh, here's Todd's Belmont horse. You know, he's by Tappet, and 12 furlongs is going to work. Let's go down to Florida, where all eyes, and I'm glad you brought up the Swale, because I do want you to hit on it, Jay, and Green Light Go comes back in this spot, and I keep equating his return and his sophomore bout with that of Tis the Law, considering the disappointment of their final starts at two.
Right. Different kinds of situations, though, because in the case of Tis the Law, he's going to run in a point-scoring race going a mile and a 16th. Green Light Go is kind of doing the old-school way of doing it. We used to see this years ago, where horses would come off layoffs at three, and when they ran more often, they would start out at 7/8. And in fact, the week from Sunday, Storm the Court is going to start out in a 7/8 race at Santa Anita for his 3-year-old debut in the San Vicente. But in the case of Green Light Go, he disappointed in the Champagne in that he was favored in that race. Tis the Law was much the best that day. And then he just needed to take time off and be freshened. And this is a good starting point. He obviously runs well fresh. His first race when he won his debut was a really exciting performance, and then he came back and won the Saratoga Special. So I would think with the time off and having trained into the race, it looks pretty like he's had a pretty steady series of works at Palm Meadows, including one that was the best of the morning. I would think he'd be ready to go, and if he's not, it would be illuminating as to whether he's improved from two to three. But I'm expecting him to run well, and obviously the other horse in there that's very exciting and worth watching is Untitled, who was a fast winner of his debut for Ralph Nix and then was the subject of a private purchase and now has moved to Mark Cassie's barn.
Well, and the private purchase involving Gary Barber, and the more I handicapped last night, Jay, the more spots I saw that I think Gary's got stake horses in four spots tomorrow that he's involved in. Gary Barber looking to really push that candidacy for this year to ownership eclipse. And let's turn to the Holy Bull. And, you know, here's as you mentioned, you know, a kind of a depth issue, but there's a couple of horses in here that are going to try to kind of shoulder their way into the picture. Toledo and Pat Biancone with the Ette Indian, and even, you know, even some of the outsiders look like they've got some quality about them.
Yeah, I mean, this will be a chance to see if those horses that you just mentioned step up. Ette Indian and Toledo were 1-2 in a one-turn mile allowance at Gulfstream about 6 weeks ago, and now they get to stretch out around two turns on dirt. Ette Indian has been two turns before, but it was on grass. And last time out, I thought it was a pretty interesting performance from him in that he's certainly just bred for grass. He's by Summer Front. He's out of a mizzen-mast mare. I mean, you can certainly understand why they started him on the grass, and he won his debut, but after running in the Bourbon, not having the, you know, he just had a terrible draw on a wide trip, and so this is a time of year where you take a shot on dirt, and it certainly worked out for him, and I'm interested to see if he moves forward off that race. I thought Toledo ran well. He didn't have a clean trip that day, and the fig came back well. He's taken steps forward in all of his races, and he drew well. It's not a big field, but can't hurt to have the rail. But obviously the focus of the race is on Tis the Law, and I just don't know what to make of him because I was really disappointed in his Kentucky Jockey Club. I know a lot was made of the traffic trouble that he encountered, but to me he just sat in a really good spot. He had a little bit of traffic. He had to wait. And then he had room, and he just didn't have the kind of acceleration you would have liked to have seen. Was it because he shipped? Was it because of the surface? He was running on a sloppy sealed track for the first time. I mean, those are all things that could have contributed to that. But the bottom line is it was just a regression from what we'd seen earlier, and the form of that race has been kind of muddied. Silver Prospector came back and was just an okay fourth last week, or the Smarty Jones. And then Finnick the Fierce was just an okay fourth in the race at Fairgrounds. But Enforceable, who was fourth of the Kentucky Jockey Club, you know, won the LeComp, the race that Finnick the Fierce was in. So it's a muddy race. I think it's I'm not going to want to take a short price on Tis the Law. If he runs back to his champagne, he's the winner. I just don't know where he's at right now. I'm really at a crossroads on what he's at. That's why I just want to sit on my hands and watch what he does tomorrow. And I would dive in if I got a price on either of those other two that we mentioned, the Tay Indian or Toledo, if I got a square betting number on either of them.
Let's come to Santa Anita. And here's Baffert with the Los Al Futurity winner. I was there for that, Jay. I was really impressed. 1,000 words comes in, looking to extend the unbeaten portion of his career. But there's some competition here too. Excited to the potential that Mandela's got in Tis a Magician, and Baffert's other horse, High Velocity, certainly, and Coder. This is all right. I know that we'd rather have 8, 9, 10, but it's interesting, this group.
Yeah, I mean, all the fields in the three races are fairly abbreviated, only six here. And, you know, in California, one of the reasons that happens is just because a lot of the horses in this division are concentrated in just a handful of barns. And that's why it's fun when you see a Storm the Court breakthrough or something of that nature, because it's just they need to be a little more spread out than they are. 1,000 words, obviously a lot has been thought of him from before he ever ran. He was a $1 million yearling purchase. And his Los Al Futurity, I thought, was a really game win, because if you watch the race live or that day, or if you come back and watch tape of the race, it really looks like Enno D'Or is going by him with a 16th to go. And 1,000 words just digs back in and sends him off and gallops out in front the whole way. One of the interesting parallels, Steve, I've mentioned this before, but I just want to reiterate with 1,000 words, his career so far has exactly mirrored McKenzie's, who debuted in a sprint at Santa Anita in late October and won, and then came back 6 weeks later and won the Los Al Futurity. Now, in the case of McKenzie, he got put up on a DQ of Soleimani, but the same career to this point in terms of a sprint win and then right into the Los Al Futurity and winning that. And the figs they got were a point off, 92 for McKenzie, 91 for 1,000 words. So that's the kind of start that 1,000 words has had to his career. You mentioned a couple others in here. Let's go to High Velocity, who was third in the Los Al Futurity. Steve, I just didn't really see a whole lot of excuse for him that day. He was a little bit keen early on, and the pace he set was probably a little faster than they want to go, but he really didn't put up a whole lot of fight, I thought, late. And this, to me, being in this race tomorrow, strikes me as he better run a really strong race, or he's just not going to be, I think, a Derby trail type of horse. And there's plenty of good options for a horse like that. But this, to me, is a make-or-break race as to whether he stays on the Derby trail tomorrow for High Velocity. You know, Tis a Magician, I'm not going to say he's the next Omaha Beach, because that's, I think, an unfair thing to say. But Omaha Beach took a long time to break his maiden, and then once he did, he really took off from there. And Tis a Magician has kind of had a similar career in that he finished second in his instance, four of his first five races, and then finally got the hang of it last time and won with a career best figure. And you would think, being by Tis now, who just got better and better through his career, that this horse still has some improvement in him. And the fact that he's raced often and stayed right in training, I think, speaks to what kind of soundness he has. And I don't think he's good enough maybe yet to beat 1,000 words, but I'm interested to see if he can take another step forward tomorrow and continue down the Derby trail. Lastly, there are a couple of the horses in here that are moving from grass to dirt for the first time. You've got Royal Act for Urton and Encoder. They both come out of the Eddie Logan, which Encoder won. The interesting thing, Steve, that in the case of Royal Act, he's by American Pharoah, and they seem to act on anything. Encoders by English Channel, which is all grass, obviously. But Sadler's formulator stats going turf to dirt are really strong. It's like a 30% return on investment. His ROI is like in the 2.60 range. So I don't think this horse is, I mean, you can tell why they put him on the grass to start. He's by English Channel. He's stayed on the grass. He's run some good races on there. I don't think he's good enough, but that kind of picked my head up when I saw that stat on Sadler going turf to dirt. Rosario rode the horse last time, but he's moving over to high velocity. So Mike Smith gets the mount on him. But that's just I thought an interesting angle if you thought Encoder had a chance. I don't think he's quite this good, but that gave me a second look at the horse owing to that stat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I'm glad you mentioned that. In addition, I do want to ask you about the San Pascal.
All righty. Ask away.
What do you think? Here's Roadster, who stayed home, because Baffert, at one point, Roadster was being considered as much for Pegasus as anybody. And, mid-court, trying to snap back after that, difficult trip that had him, on the defensive last time. King Abner. Kind of an interesting set of 10 in here, and I mentioned the latest Sadler older horse acquisition, Combatant, now in the barn of Costa Aronis and John Sadler.
Yeah, I really like Midcourt in here. I just thought he was eliminated last time at the start of that race, and he just struck me as a horse who was just really getting good. His form last summer and into the fall at Del Mar, and then at the Santa Anita at the fall meet and then the Del Mar fall meet when he won the Native Diver. He just looked to me like a horse who was going to be a big player in the West Coast older horse division this year. But I just thought he had a legitimate excuse last time. He didn't break. And like you said, he was on the defensive the whole way after that. I think if he gets out of the gate going a mile and an eighth, he's just a better horse than the rest in here. So I like him a lot. The Roadster certainly ran well last time in the Malibu, and similar to Midcourt, he didn't break well when he ran in the Native Diver. He just didn't run his best race that day. I know he won the Santa Anita Derby going a mile and an eighth. I just think he might be better as a 7/8 to 1/3 mile kind of horse. He's certainly capable of winning at a mile and an eighth. We've seen that, but I don't know that that's his strong suit for the rest of his career. And like I said, if Midcourt breaks well, he's just a better horse than these horses, and I think he's not only a big player tomorrow, but I could see him being a major factor in the Santa Anita handicap if he runs to what I would expect him to do tomorrow.
Well, a nice trio of stakes, the San Marcos as well, just six seemingly going postward in the turf event, that includes the runner-up from the Breeders' Cup Turf, United, who got stymied last time, had to settle for a second behind Oscar Dominguez. Jay, we will see you tomorrow, and when does Derby Watch drop?
Derby Watch drops in 2 weeks. But I have two words for you regarding the San Marcos. Brown Storm.
Your colleague, the lead handicapper for Southern California, Brad Free, had some glowing things to say about how sneaky Brown Storm is in there after nothing but trouble in the last...
Yeah, if you watch the tape of the race, you'll see why we like him. He had a horrendous trip in the Hollywood Turf Cup.
He's 6-1, and the money is going to spread around in there. Obviously, United is going to take plenty, and Oscar Dominguez,
Cleopatra Strike will take money. I mean, I don't know that I'll get 6 on Brown Storm, but I if I can get 5, I'd be happy.
Yeah, Cleopatra Strike 2-1, and. I haven't seen. We have to see Michael McCarthy here hopefully today and check in with him. It should be a very nice day here tomorrow, and certainly looking forward to it. Jay, I appreciate it, and I will see you tomorrow.
I will see you tomorrow at the Great Race Place.
Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman, and we're going to stay right here because Rick Hammerly standing by at Oaklawn. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Coming to you from the press box. Unusual.
And I'm coming to you from the press office at Oakland. Same bat station, different bat time.
You're working your way up in the mornings from longstanding third hour leadoff to middle of hour two. Now you're in hour one.
Well, I used to bat cleanup. I was usually to lead off. I'm moving back in the order, but that's fine. It's all good. Timing wise, it's better for me here because of we're entering today. So we enter on Fridays there. Where at Santa Anita, we didn't enter on Fridays, and we had free rain. So you got relegated to the press box, I understand, yesterday, which is fine. But you want to be out where the action is. Out there at Clocker's Corner, right? See people. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, I know. A day like today, the weekend preview is fine because we're rifling around the country and talking to correspondents and so forth and handicapping. It's not as big a deal, but I mean, certainly Monday, I want to be out there for recap. I mean, you got these three stakes, and Baffert almost certainly will hit 3,000 wins over the weekend, and I just rather be there.
You just put the old on him.
It's going to be tough. He's got a couple of particularly tomorrow, actually early on the card, he's got a couple of small field short price types. My Happy Girl in that 7 furlong second race for the 3-year-old fillies, and he's also got 4-5 Auberge in an allowance. So I mean, I don't know.
Knowing him, he just wants to get there and move on and get that off his back when you reach a milestone like that. But 3,000 for when you run in the races that he does, which means not a lot of claiming races, which limits the number of horses you can run. 3,000 is a pretty darn big number.
Well, and really, I think people think of him as a quote unquote super trainer, but he's never had a big barn. He's never had, for years, he typically would have 60 to 70 horses. Maybe now he's got, a little closer to 100, but you look through his starter counts, it isn't super trainer size.
No, absolutely not, and that's a good point because the number's limited at Santa Anita. Probably now he probably has 45-ish, over there, and then he has his overflow at Los Alamitos. Maybe 50-60 there when the 2-year-olds start coming in, and then it comes down. But he's never been 150, 200, 200 number trainer ever. So anyway, it's a big accomplishment. But we're here. We got through and we got through the first week, the 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I'll tell you, it's so neat to walk out of the office, walk upstairs and just see people at the races. It's a really cool feeling, and they're there. Everyone seems like, they're talking to somebody. They got a beer in their hand, a sandwich in their hand, watching a replay, doing this, doing that, real good buzz feel in the weekend. And, the weather isn't ideal every day out here. It's actually been pretty good from the standards here. It's been most every day has been around 50, which is good. A little rain here, a little rain there. Doesn't affect anything. Like opening day and on Saturday, the races were labeled Monday, muddy. And I can't think the last time I've actually seen a track labeled muddy. They just let it go. It doesn't affect a thing. except the only thing it might change is training, and that's announced as soon as possible. And there's days when you don't race. We just train at noon. Literally, the horses out there at noon doing what they need to do. Nobody complains. You just kind of move along and get things done. So it's really kind of neat just kind of battle right through everything. And also, I noticed when it rains here, also, there's not a tremendous amount of scratches. People know, you know, it's a dirt track. It could rain. So there's none of this. So if it rains, I don't want to run type of thing. So very interesting learning weekend for me. I'm still getting used to a few things around town here and there, branching out a little bit. I'm sitting next to Nancy. She said, "Yeah, people are tough here," and I said, "Yeah, you know what? They are not much shakes them up." So it's good. I was happy on my old home front to see a lot of participation by the California both jockeys and trainers that came here. I think there's actually today. I think there's 10 entries from California trainers in the box, which means they came to run. The three riders that came, Joe Talamo, Martin Garcia, Tyler Bays, they all won at least two races for the weekend. They all had smiles on their faces when they got their paycheck after the week. And, there's a lot of smiles around town here. So very, very good, tough, competitive racing. We did have a couple dead heats. On the one day, a lot of
haven't talked about race. That. Yeah, that was the within an hour races 4 and 6 and a pair of wind dead heats and pretty funny.
Yeah, so I mean, you can see why if you look through. I know back in the day, Roger Stein, when he did his show, he used to call. You know, he used to say we're going to have 8, 9, 10 equine puzzles. And these are definitely, you have a lot of equine puzzles here at Oaklawn. And very challenging, and it's one of those, risk-reward. You do the work and get through it, you're rewarded. Just for instance, Saturday's card starts out with just your old typical $10,000 starter. And there's 8 horses, and they all come from 8 different tracks. So, you got that, and 6 of the 8 won the last races. And that's what I've known in a lot of the races here. I'm just starting to get used to it. It's very competitive in that you don't see a lot, other than some of the maiden claimers that go off. You don't see a lot of horses that finish up the track consistently in a lot of the races. They might have a bad one here and there. But a lot of the horses have finished, 5th or better in their last couple starts. So, very, very playable. It's hard. It's not as easy to toss half the field as when we handicap a race. Okay, I'm going to eliminate that one, that one, that one, that one. So you really have to take a second look at some of them. So we're trying to get a little bit of the feel of it. Next week, I'm going to try and get someone on here, the local Equibase caller, and who's done it for years, and give some nuances of the track and how it plays and some of the things as I'm just starting to learn that. But so far, the knock on wood, the entries have gone well. And like I said, the racing is very competitive. And, so far, so good.
Well, and the three race days going back to opening day a week ago. And we were looking forward to, of course, the Smarty Jones. It was one of the Asmussens. We talked to Steve the other day, Gold Street. He's basically going to kind of keep options open for all of his horses that are between Fairgrounds and Oaklawn. Looking forward to the Southwest and the Rebel. The other stakes, and I haven't mentioned them, I kind of saved them for this visit, but the two divisions of the fifth season last week on last Saturday, Diodoro, with Pioneer Spirit, and the Pioneer Spirit, that pricey claim, the $150,000 claim. He's very, very steadily earning his keep, two for two, and banking money toward that big price. And the other division was Cipriano Contreras, Guess Sweet.
Guess Sweet. ran down the other horse, and what a good guy he is. He's as I just met him, and he's just a good guy to be around. You know, some people question, well, why'd you split it? Why don't you just have just run one big field? Now, this, like I said, in a meet like this, it's longer than normal. If it's a month long meet, you probably don't split it. But you're doing stuff now for down the road. So instead of having, one winner of the race to move on to the next one, you split it. And Pat says, let's split it. So great. And so now you all of a sudden you have two races. You have two winners coming out. And, probably the first couple there will move on to the next, the next one, the Razorback, in February. And so now all of a sudden you've got a few more competitors in there. So, it depends when and where. So that's the reason for splitting some of these races early. It gives you a couple races, a couple things down the line. If this race was, the last of this series, you're not going to split it. You're going to run a nice 12-horse field. But it's all about timing and when and where it is. And plus you got 14 people that entered that wanted to run, did have a couple scratches. So, they like to, they're not afraid of spending a little money here in the purses as everyone remembered last year splitting the Rebel. So, very, very accommodating. We split a couple maiden races along the way, and it's nice not having to worry, about the purse account too much because, everything just kind of meshes in here. So that was why that race was split. And so get ready. It's all, you're always thinking ahead here. So in a 3-month meet. So that was the reason for that. I wanted to get that because a lot of people were questioning that.
And the
what
Pippen.
Else? Now, just,
hold on. You got the Pippen. Let's also mention Larry Jones's win in the Philly race, Philly and Mayor, Pippen
right.
Stake, and this was a romp, essentially.
He was thrilled to death. What a nice man Larry is. I mean, I've known him over the phone for years, and we've met a few times. How you doing? But it's nice to spend a little more time around him. Always has a good thing to say about anybody or anything. Was thrilled with that. His other filly ran down in Houston. In the Ladies Classic, and she ran well. She's back here. I think you'll see one of them in the Viacoa maybe in February, and I think the other one that ran in Houston, Street Band, is going to run. We'll wait and run in the Azari, which is the last prep before the Apple Blossom. So
nice.
He also had a nice filly that broke her maiden here as well. So you never know what you're going to see here, and it'll be witnessed by the 3 days coming up. We have a very good competitive Friday card. The feature is a 200 long on the dirt, which I would never see a 12 horse field like this pretty much anywhere but here. But Lone Sailor is in there, and it's one of those. The entry came across, and I'm going, oh, this horse can't be eligible for this. But lo and behold, won a lot of money. I think he's won about 1.2 million. And he's still eligible for the condition. So, hey, the year's just starting. Let's take a step back and, try and, find a little softer spot. I'm sure we'll see him in some of the Razorback and eventually the Oakland Handicap at the end of the year. So a lot of races here to prep. And then tomorrow there's a little excitement. I mean, it's a nice card, but there's a filly running tomorrow here that is really, or the early buzz in the backside, and it's a 3-year-old, but it's a filly, that's Therese, Brad Cox's filly. And she is a big specimen, huge. I was like, Nancy's giving me the huge. And she was here, got here a little the other day, and we got four horses to run against her. And Paul McClellan, our stake state coordinator here, was out trying to hustle other people. He was quoted as people telling him, I'm not running against that beep beep. And so she's schooling the paddock, and I'm just looking at a picture of she looks like a 5-year-old colt or 4 or 5-year-old horse out there. So a lot of buzz around her. She runs into Martha Washington. It'll be for her first time going long, so how that goes. But we want to see her and we'll hold off until after the race. But she has that look. That's owned and trained by Judmont. And so if it is a mischief, and so, you know, anything can happen there. But she had two races, and she's won them both. The last one, she won a little overnight stake at the Fairgrounds by almost 12 lengths. So, you know, a little buzz surrounding her, so we'd both be anxious. But, you know, no races like that are giveaways. I mean, Steve Asmussen has a filly in there that's actually won going long three times. So you know how that goes going in. But that's a little bit of buzz to see her. Also on Saturday is the American Beauty, which has last year's winner in Amy's Challenge. A couple other, you know, nice fillies in there. So starting off here, and then, you know, it's, you know, the stakes are the highlights, but there's a lot of other races, you know, all during the card that aren't necessarily, you know, the high caliber, but the quality and quantity and the competitiveness of some of these races really make it an interesting card to check out.
Well, got some thoughts?
I not yet. I'm not ready.
All right.
Almost not ready to get there. I'm doing the workout. I'm not confident enough to say, hey, you know, I really like that. I want people to say, oh, yeah, Rick likes that one, to go and, you know, do that. But that's why I'm give me another week. And like I said, next week we're going to have someone on that's going to give a few more insights to that. And then on Saturday, I wanted to get this in before we go somewhere else. There's a 3-year-old allowance race. Once other than the first condition going short, and Ancient Warrior from the Hollendorfer Barns in there. He's fresh off a nice dominating win at Del Mar. Had a little bit of a break. Thought maybe he would have come back going long, and wasn't quite sure what he was going to do. So he popped in. He popped into the little allowance race here once again, a 12-horse field. So we'll be expecting to see him. His other colt that did go long last week that we thought was going to run a little bit, didn't run as well. You know, whether you're going to chalk that up to the new surface coming from Woodbine or the weather and that type of thing, we don't know. But we'll take a look at this Ancient Warrior. And Steve Asmussen has a filly, colt in there, Little Menace, right outside of Ancient Warrior, the 2 and 3 hole, that looked like they're going to be the ones to beat in that field. But once again, and some of these allowance races, they're very competitive, and you just got some horse to keep an eye on going down the line. I wanted to, what else do I have here? Oh, I want to talk about the casino racetrack phenomenon that happens here at Oaklawn, and you really have to see it to believe it. I sent out a little a tweet last week about when the gates open, and yes, everyone says, oh, you got to watch the people rushing in, you know, from the outside. And I stood over there, and, yeah, they come in from the outside. And I looked over here, and the casino, which connects to the racetrack, there's doors in, doors out, right by the paddock. And here are these people at 11 o'clock when the gates open were rushing out of the casino just to get a space on the rail. It was crazy. And then I was told, wait till Saturday and stand over there by those doors. And it's crazy. So the race is over. They wait a little bit. People wander back into the casino. And then 10 minutes to post, I mean, the casino empties out. They rush out. And it's crazy. And it's actually so cool to see people, you know, hey, I got to get back and get to the paddock or get to the window or get somewhere to go to be at the racetrack and watch this race. So it's quite a phenomenon. And you can't, it's, you know. And so you see it. It's something you can't believe. But you know, I just wanted to bring up the Larry Colma situation. Larry's been a longtime friend of mine, and knew that it was going to eventually come to roost, and I'd forgotten about it, and now announced I guess a couple of days ago. But I don't know John, and I'm sure I've listened to John or Embriola my whole life, as we all have, and I know he'll step in and do a good job, but I wanted to just wish Larry, you know, good luck down the road. He'll be, I got to actually say to him, as everyone said to me, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. But I know he will be, but I know he'll miss calling race at Naira, but John will do great. And, you know, just wanted to wish Larry, you know, luck down the road, but we'll see what happens with that thing. But that the announcer gig is a tough gig. It's, you know, there's not many spots, and And it's usually a domino deal. When one thing happens, a couple other things happen. But anyway, good luck to Larry. And then on a more, I just wanted a more personal note on when this Kobe thing, I just want to talk about that. For some reason, it's been in the back of my head since it happened. So it's kind of a weird deal. So I'm here in Hot Springs. And Sunday morning, I got a text, because I'm still on the L.A. deal, that a helicopter went down in Calabasas. And because I get the news stuff, and I'm thinking, okay, well, so now Calabasas is, from where I live as the crow flies, about 8 miles, not that far. And they kind of mentioned the road, and I said, you know, I drive on that road all the time, and didn't think too much of it. And then 10 minutes later, Gina texted me, Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter crash. And I said, you know, kind of put two and two together, go, it's got to be the same crash. I said, hey, run in the backyard, you know, look over there and you know, see if you see any smoke. Because on a clear day, you have a chance. And she says, I can't see anything. It's all cloudy and fogged in. I said, okay, whatever. And then, you know, I said, you know, Kobe Bryant just died. And Kobe, yeah, yeah. And it was very strange. It was very strange that, you know, wasn't a whole lot of reaction here. And I kind of got that, but it was really weird. You know, I turned on the TV and went through the day, you know, looking at stuff. And you know, I felt weird because it happened close to my home. You know, grew up in a Laker fan. I grew up in LA, and it was really strange. You know, I mean, I traveled all over the place and deal with stuff here and there. And you know, I miss being home, but it was such a strange phenomenon. I felt when we talked about when he went down with his daughter and everything, I really felt I wish I could push a button and be in LA right now. You know what I mean? I felt like I was missing out on something because I really had nobody to talk about it with. And even though I wasn't a huge Kobe fan, you know, he was just part of everyone's life in LA. It was just a strange, like, phenomenon being where I am with not really anybody else getting it or really, you know, being caring that much. And anyway, I just thought that was, I just wanted to kind of like get that off my chest.
I understand.
At the one time there, I just felt like, you know, I wish I was home, you know, hugging my daughter for a little bit. And anyway, weird phenomena to not be, in, you know, to talk to anyone. Nobody wanted to even talk about it or mention it. And it really wasn't a huge thing here. And, you know, I get that because, you know, they're out in the routes and I'm 1,500 miles from L.A. But anyway, you know, we so sorry for that. And just because of the closeness and you know, he was an L.A. guy. I mean, I'm an L.A. guy. And anyway, I want to feel better now. I wanted to get that off my chest.
No, I understand. I get it.
You know, I'm sure you're there now. I'm sure you hear a little bit about it. You can't go by without it. But
it's all over.
Right.
All over town. The buses, the city buses, with the scrawl, you know, the automated scrawl on the front of the bus,
right,
have RIP Kobe messages. It's everywhere. It's quite something. And the flip side I could give you on that, Hammer, was I happened to have been in New Orleans when Tom Benson passed, and it was remarkable to be there and see the outpouring, you know, be in the community at the time, you know, immediately and the outpouring of affection for him there. So I know exactly what felt absent about it's the whole thing is just surreal, frankly.
Yeah. Very, you know, very surreal. And anyway, so, but it's all good. And anyway, that's the report from here. Like I said,
next
week I hope to give a little bit more of an insight of the racetrack itself and maybe a few nuances and how to gamble. And I'll tell you what, I mean, Robertino Diodorfi, you got to watch out for his story. Not that there's others, of course, Steve Asmussen and, you know, Steve Hobbies and Brad Cox and all that. But I tell you, Diodoro's, he puts his horses are competitive wherever they are. So, you know, keep a double eye on him for sure.
Well, we'll talk next week, Rick, and have a little bit more of a base of information to go by. So far, it's been you know, very, very formful. Nice mix of prices and faves and a lot of the familiar names, you know, out of the blocks fast, including my friend Dan Hart. He said Ingrid Mason early in the meet. That's his, those are his plays, and she's got, I think, at least three wins. So a few things like that. But, you know, good luck over the weekend. We're looking, everybody excited about seeing what Taraz does and take the next step, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Enjoy. Hope you get back to field level by Monday.
We'll see. We'll find out at later on today. I'll work with Mike Willman and see if we can't get to Clocker's Corner for Monday and Tuesday. We'll stay right here. I've got Nick Tamaro standing by, and Hammer didn't offer any opinions, but Nick will, because in fact Oaklawn is the pick five partner tomorrow with New York. And in addition to the pick five, the eighth and the ninth at Aqueduct, seventh, eighth, and ninth at Oaklawn, should mention there is a pick five carryover today at Aqueduct. $46,000 pick five, late pick five carryover. So heads up for that. And I have not looked at the sequence. Nick probably has.